In my last article written for the Fellowship newsletter, I remarked upon the fact that my upcoming departure was bittersweet. Those of you who know the reasons for leaving understand this on a basic level. I am moving back to my hometown of Dayton, Ohio, in order to be closer to my mother. She is recovering from a series of strokes and is making the difficult transition from assisted living to skilled care. I look forward to making Mom's life in the nursing home more enjoyable, with frequent visits, getting her outside for short trips, and working with the staff to ensure that her care is as good as it can be. As this has been the role of my only sibling, Joyce, for the past 7 years, and who lives in Lexington, Kentucky, 2.5 hours away, I'm looking forward to making her life more enjoyable as well. The implication I made in this article was that this returning home was the sweet part. Likewise, the fact that I'm leaving this area of 40 plus years, my spiritual home of 12, and my dream job of 9 was the bitter part. But the term bittersweet can be more complex, and sometimes the bitter and the sweet work in both directions. For example, I am sad to leave this fellowship, my first spiritual home as an adult. But because of my experiences here, I look forward to finding a new spiritual community to bond with. Conversely, I look forward to being closer to my mom, my niece and her family, and my sister. And I'm hoping that my living in Dayton entices my children to come and visit their Nana, aunt, and cousins. On the other hand, being so close to my mother means dealing with a loved one struggling with dementia and all the pain that goes with that. Here's a quick story about my mom and me. During my latest trip to Dayton, I took my mom to an appointment with her neurologist. We were following up on her progress since a major stroke that she suffered in December. There was a brief examination and the usual battery of questions. And then there was an unexpected turn. Instead of Mom returning home, the neurologist ordered a CAT scan and an MRI, suspecting yet another stroke, and my mother was readmitted into the hospital for 3 days. Her stint in the hospital during the first stroke in December had been harrowing, and it was clear this time she had not forgotten. Within minutes of being told of her readmittance, her blood pressure shot up 50 points. She initially appeared to remain calm, but 24 hours into this most recent stay in the hospital, she was exhibiting paranoia and experiencing hallucinations on a level reminiscent of her ordeal just a few months ago. Instead of my sister, it was I who stayed with her this time, trying to talk her through it. I had been well prepped by Joyce, who has dealt with many medical emergencies these past years, but the experience for me was exhausting and humbling. The complexities of bittersweet were not lost on me. And yet, as I drove back to Appleton a few days later, I reflected on what had happened, and I doubted that I could have handled the situation as well as I did just a few years ago. It dawned on me that being here has taught me an awful lot. Now, I am one of those people who focuses on the next thing I'm going to say rather than focusing on what's being said. I hate that in myself. I still struggle to listen well in conversations, but offering pastoral care to my musicians and choir members has been such good training. It allowed me, I think, to listen better to my mother, and perhaps the words I offered were of more comfort than the words I might have spoken without my experiences here. It is fair to say that I've been well prepped by all of you as well. So, what else have I learned from the fellowship? Well, I've learned to trust my instincts more. This has led me to become a more confident composer, songwriter, vocalist, performer. The idea of me becoming a solo performer once seemed preposterous to me just a couple of years ago. But now I look forward to this possibility. Participating in journey groups and coming of age have deepened for me the value of sharing experiences and exploring what it means to be human. And working with this amazing staff has rekindled my love for collaboration. In the form of creating meaningful and rich experiences in worship. I've said it many times, but it bears repeating. The same group has taught me to love staff meetings. How many of us get to say that? But I think the best lesson that I've learned here is learning the importance of having a spiritual home. For me, the necessity of having that home. I spent a few years as a child attending a fellowship in Dayton, and I have many fond memories of RE classes and LRY meetings. LRY stands for Liberal Religious Youth. It was they were youth groups that were popular in the 60s and 70s, and 80s, I think. But as happens with many of us, college, marriage, and then children happened front and center, and those childhood memories faded temporarily. I was oh so slow in recognizing the need for a spiritual home as an adult. And I'm certainly glad that I finally did. And this leads to another twist of complexity to my own sense of bittersweet. For although I am quite sad to leave this blessed community, words cannot describe the excitement I feel when I think about the search ahead for a new community. The search will have a very different feel for reasons I'll explain in a while. But nevertheless, the sweetness I anticipate is one I doubt I've ever experienced before. And this, all of this, I owe to you. Rainer Maria Rilke was a Bohemian Austrian poet and author whose inherently lyrical style of poetry and prose has remained popular throughout the 20th and 21st century. The reading you just heard from Dan comes from Rilke's Book of Hours, Love Poems to God, an ambitious collection of 135 poems he completed between the years of 1898 and 1903. He was just 28 when he finished them. When I first read that poem, I thought I had found something I could use as a source for the central idea for this sermon. I was taken in by the mystical imagery that follows the line, "All life is being lived." Rilke asks, who is living it then? Is it the things themselves, or something waiting inside them, like an unplayed melody in a flute? He then makes a list of possible sources, both inanimate objects like the wind and the branches of trees, and living things like birds. But it was the question of whether life was being lived by the things themselves or by the potential stored within them that caught my attention. I found very appealing this idea that life lived is something hidden away, waiting to be discovered and released. This active mode of living life, requiring effort and interaction, as opposed to a more passive mode where one might sit idly by, waiting for things to change, is something that resonates within me. I take no stock in any philosophy that promotes an attitude of resignation or, worse still, entitlement. And so, I reread this text many times over, trying to dig deeper into it. Why had Rilke made no mention of people in his list of possible sources of lives lived? Even though the mystical notion that life flowed through things, living and otherwise, I found very appealing. But I found the omission of people odd. And then I noticed how the poem started with the transition phrase, "and yet." Was there something to be found in the preceding poem? So I looked back and I read, "No one lives his life. Disguised since childhood, haphazardly assembled from voices and fears and little pleasures, we come of age as masks. Our true face never speaks. Somewhere there must be storehouses, where all these lives are laid away like suits of armor or old carriages or clothes hanging limply on the walls. Maybe all paths lead there, to the repository of unlived things. And then, most deliberately in sequence, the poet launches into his next verse. And yet, though we strain against the deadening grip of daily necessity, I sense there is this mystery. All life is being lived. Who is living it then? Spoiler alert, Rilke doesn't think it's us. Well, this changed everything. Rilke was charging that as children we were being manipulated in such fashion that we were rendered incapable of living our lives as adults. I knew that Rilke spent his life trying to reconnect with the life force, which he claimed organized religion had labeled as God, and that he believed that art represented the truest path to make that reconciliation. I was forced to reconsider what Rilke was trying to say, and I then recalled an exchange between my father and me before I started college. Now, during my senior year in high school, I spent a lot of time thinking about the line of study I would pursue in college. I was thinking of things between education, being a math teacher, to TV and radio, to studying music. I had a lot of ideas, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. When my dad learned that I had settled on music to major in, he was clearly displeased with my decision, telling me that I was not being practical. He asked me what my favorite subject in school was besides music, and I replied, math. His response was, "Well, then you should study accounting." Like you, I remember unsuccessfully stifling a laugh, which made him pretty angry. I thought his reasoning ridiculous, that the study of accounting could kill, not foster, any fascination with numbers and their properties. When I retold this conversation to my mom, she shared an exchange between my dad and his father years ago. In high school, my father was a talented trumpet player, and his best friend was more talented still. When he learned that his best friend intended to become a music major in college, Dad announced to my grandfather that he too wanted to study music. My grandfather then announced that no son of his was going to be a professional musician, as if doing so was akin to becoming a drug dealer or a pimp. And then he asked my father, "What is your favorite subject in school besides music?" It's true. My dad replied, "Science." "Then you shall be an engineer," was my grandfather's proclamation, and he laid the groundwork to have my father enrolled in the University of Iowa as an electrical engineering major. My mother then had shared this story with my mom as an important life lesson, that we all have to do things in life that we don't want to. He shared this with my sister and I, too, on many occasions, although I don't remember either of us taking it very seriously. After my parents divorced, my mom made sure that we understood that it was important for us to pursue our dreams and that in doing so, we would be happier. I studied music, and I became a professional musician and teacher. The decision hasn't made me rich, and I never expected it to, but it has made me happy. Now, I don't want to give the impression that my sister and I went forth doing only those things which made us happy, learning that sometimes doing things we don't want to do is a life lesson. But we learned there was a danger in making this life lesson a central tenet of living life. Now, drawing comparisons between these two stories and Rilke's poem is presumptuous of me. I recognize that. After all, the poem is part of Rilke's attempt to reconnect with God and thus finally speak with his true face, whereas my story simply describes a moment in my life when I decided to make music my profession. I didn't make that choice to find God. but I do believe that the decision was instrumental in shaping how I've attempted to reconnect with my own spiritual needs. And my grandfather's decision didn't cause my dad to abandon music altogether. He pursued his passion for music throughout all his life, albeit as a hobby. In his mind, it was more practical. But his entire professional career was centered on something that, not surprisingly, didn't interest him very much. And I am sad when I imagine that he tried to find solace in something he probably learned from his father, that we all do things in life we don't want to do. I fear my father's true face never had that chance to speak. My coming here has led me closer to speaking with my true face. This community hasn't just given me the opportunity to experience my dream job, and it has been my dream job. As I've said, it's allowed me to discover within myself a desire to seek spiritual community. Here, I have to part with Wilke, for he fervently believed that the seeking of God was strictly a solitary exercise, as doing so within the settings of an established church was just another example of succumbing to the deadening grip of daily necessity. So dark. I believe, as I imagine many of you do, that seeking connection with that life force, whatever name it is given, in such a setting as this, free of dogma and conceit, is as noble and true as Rilke's belief that art was his true religion. And so, as I prepare to leave, I imagine the process of seeking another blessed community. But what will that look like? Well, for one thing, I will seek strictly as a volunteer and not as a staff member, as no position in the Dayton area is currently open. I am looking forward to this, though, as I hope it will give me a new perspective on my search for community. I think it will be a pleasant change of pace. For another, becoming more involved with my mother's life will doubtless have a positive impact on my own. How can I help but become a better listener, a better caregiver, a better son? I also look forward to this. And how I pay my bills will have to change as well. I might find myself back in a classroom or in a full-time music studio. Or perhaps I will find a job that utilizes my talents in altogether new and unexpected ways. Indeed, life is a riddle and a mystery. But I know this. Although the road may get muddy and rough, I will get there, and I know it will be good. I will take with me so many wonderful memories of serving you here. And I firmly believe that these memories... Sorry. And I firmly believe that these same memories will serve me well on my next chapter. Rilke wrote... He wrote, "I live my life in widening circles that reach across the world. And this is how I see life, a series of journeys connected into a continuous path. The demarcation between journeys is sometimes nebulous and sometimes abrupt, but the widening circles form a spiral reaching out across the world while continuously drawing upon that which is stored within. And all the while, this spiral, this path, leads me ever closer to my true face. May it be so. And blessed be."